This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, answer a phone call from language, but all I can hear is breathing. Content note about today's show. Expect rich words about sexual acts and associated body parts. So get out now if it's not appropriate for you to listen to a discussion of flanges, bell towers, collywobbling, curds and whey, furious eels. Right, etymology time. In episode 21 of the show, we learned the origin of penis from the Latin for tail. Now it's time for the etymology of vagina, which word has been around in English since about the 1680s. That meaning of bodily passage was a specialised modern medical Latin sense of the older Latin word vagina, which meant a scabbard or sheath or husk. That's nice, isn't it? The comparison of a vagina either to something withered and dry, or to a receptacle for a weapon. One interpretation would be that modern medical Latin was instituted by men who were either bitter or self-aggrandizing. It's not a sword, gentlemen. It is not a sword. Quite a lot of genital words' etymologies show that the body part in question was just named after something it seemed to resemble. Glans, the Latin for acorn. Pelvis, Latin for basin or bucket. Clitoris is from Greek, could be from the verb kleien, to sheath, because it's covered, or from the noun form of that word, kleis, which meant key. The other possibility is that it's from kleitis, the side of a hill. So it's either a view of the whole arrangement as a lock and key, or zooming into it so closely all they could see was a hill. An exception to the things that look a bit like other things genital etymologies is the word pudendum. It derives from the Latin word pudere, meaning to be ashamed. So your genitals were known as things to be ashamed of. What were you supposed to do? Hope that if you ignored them, they'd go away? The vocabulary of sex is laced with shame and condemnation. Think about how many words there are, like dirty and filthy. Which returns me to the predicament we were discussing at the end of the previous episode, the deficiencies of the vocabulary for sex. Many of us find that the available words are too scientific to be romantic, too ridiculous to be sexy, or too florid to be said without choking on your own laughter.
I am Vary McFarlane.
The novelist Vary McFarlane has written several romantic comedy novels, so I asked her how she puts sex into words without falling into romance novel clichés of heaving bosoms, throbbing members, quivering flowers. It might be easier to leave it out entirely, but Vary says, as a reader,
I would want there to be some shagging. But I find it really interesting that some people would write a romance and not put the lust element in. Because if in real life, we all know if you fall in love with somebody, of course there's a lust element to it. So I kind of thought, right, I've got to get around this because I don't want to leave it out as a convenience to me. So the accommodation I came to was that I would write the kind of leading up to the shag, because I think a big part of it is it's not just you want to know if they've shagged, you actually want to know what the words are leading up right to them falling into bed together and how it's all transacted between the two of them. I don't think you then need to be there for the next hour or two to be in the room, if you know what I mean. And then I tend to cut to what's happening straight after. And so the kind of post-coital thing. So you tend to have a fair old idea of what's happened and whether it's gone well, but you're never there during the actual act. So it's a kind of sex scene and it's kind of not. But I really did think about this, and I was trying to think, why are book sex scenes so often awful and so often unsuccessful? And my theory is that it's because you have to start naming body parts.
A hurdle that a visual medium such as film does not necessarily have to vault.
But I think there are a lot more euphemistic tools at the disposal of a filmmaker and a director than there are of a novelist. And the problem with a novelist is, as I say, you have to start naming the anatomy and what's happening in quite a technical way. And once you start naming the anatomy, your basic choices, medical textbook or softcore porn, aren't really, there aren't cool names. It's either penis or dick, isn't it? Or a comedy word. And then it all starts getting very, very uncomfortable.
Maybe it's because we're still culturally a little bit frightened or embarrassed around sex. You know, a lot of the words around sex, like, come off as jokes.
This is Caitlin Prest, one of the hosts and producers of my Radiotopian sibling, The Heart. Their show is about intimacy, and I think they do a magnificent job of portraying people's relationships with their bodies, sex, emotions.
Trying to describe the thing in words, it's hard to describe feelings with words, with the English language that we have, you know?
Oh, good. It's not just me.
Yeah, no. Oh, my God. I mean, like, I dedicated my entire life to trying to do this, and I still find it like, close to impossible. It's hard to, you know, take a physical experience that is, like, quite vivid and try to filter it through our brain, which is rational and intellectual, and then come out with a piece of language that can get at even the beginning of what that physical experience is like, you know?
Stupid, useless language.
I have had to face the question of how do I translate this experience in writing. I don't know. I've done a million pieces about masturbating. How do you put to words what's going on here in a way that actually translates the experience? Do you know what I mean? Like, the experience of masturbating is really sexy, but how, even the word masturbate is disgusting. It's my favorite thing to do, least favorite thing to say.
Do you have a word that you prefer for it?
But that's the thing. There's no alternative that feels right to me. No.
The etymology of masturbate is thought to be a contraction of two Latin words, manus, meaning hand, as in manual, and stuprare, to defile. So altogether, to defile oneself with one's hand. Now, this etymology is not certain, so it's possible that an etymologist of the past speculated that the word had to have some element of shame, because synonyms for masturbation so often do. For instance, onanism, coined from the Book of Genesis character Onan, who ejaculated on the ground rather than into his brother's widow to impregnate her, and as punishment was slain by God. This was interpreted by religious scholars over many centuries as divine criticism of semen being released for any cause aside from procreating, including the act that also got termed self-pollution and self-abuse.
That is so funny. I forgot about the word self-abuse as a term for masturbation. That really brightened my day, Helen. Thank you for reminding me.
You've gone right back to Catholic boys' school in the
30s. I was brought up Catholic, which I think is where a lot of this, like, weird feelings come from. I'm going to go home and self-abuse. No, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right. I mean, like, the other ones I'm trying to think, like jerk off. I guess I use jerk off a lot, but that also doesn't really quite seem right. Rub one out is another term that I have used, but don't feel quite right about. Wank.
And that's the term in Britain, really.
It feels very British. Like, I don't think people could say it here with a straight face.
Oh.
I've heard a couple people say it, but it sounds a bit funny.
Maybe that's why we can cope with it.
Right?
Because we have a lot of stupid words for sex because I think people can't cope with being honest about it.
Totally.
That's the national stereotype, but there's a certain truth in it.
That makes sense. Maybe part of it is that there's something, like, really, really overly earnest about unfettered sexual arousal or desire. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're really earnestly saying the words without joking about it, like, there's something uncomfortable about how earnest it is.
Discomfort may have characterized the sex lexicon for a very long time. Think of the Latin words that seem scientific and formal now: vagina, penis, glans, as aforementioned, the sheath, the little tail, the acorn. Those are all nicknames, really, for those body parts. Sometimes the nicknaming takes the form of human names: Dick, Johnson, John Thomas, or perhaps one you've selected yourself. The example familiar to everyone raised on the work of Judy Blume is Ralph. In her novel Forever, the love interest Michael names his penis Ralph, which is disturbing, firstly, because it insinuates that he thinks of his penis as an independent, sentient being, and secondly, because Ralph was also Judy Blume's father's name. Psychological repercussions of that aside, perhaps people use human names for bodily organs, because if you can cope with saying a word in one context, it's a bit easier to splutter it out in another that you might find more challenging. Or it could just be that the other available words are too excruciating.
I feel totally comfortable with talking about my discomfort saying the word cock. I really do.
Why do you think it's so uncomfortable? Is it because it sounds like a porny thing to say?
A little bit. I think that I was never given, like, a diversity of language around how to talk about our body parts and our sex feelings is not, we just don't have that really yet. All of the words around sex are hard for me to say. Truthfully, I feel much more comfortable saying pussy now than I've ever felt. And I do owe that to the Women's March. And like, all of, like I love that I get to thank Trump for like the comfort that now middle-aged women or like, you know, my mom have saying the word pussy. But pussy, cock, dirty talking, like I find dirty talking uncomfortable. But I mean, I do it for people, but I always find it, what is it? What is it? Why am I scared? I'm trying to figure out why am I scared. Pussy, pussy, pussy. I like saying the word dick. Dick is okay.
Is that because it's a bit more silly?
I think it's because my most formative boyfriend really liked the word dick and the way he said it with a lot of confidence. And that made me feel like it was okay to also say dick. But like, yeah, cock, pussy, it does feel porny. Like, it's like, when I think about my own vagina, I'm like, I don't feel like that's what it's called. It doesn't feel like that's what the name of it should be. You know what I mean? But I think you're right. I think it is because it's the only place that you hear these words spoken is in porn. And it feels like I'm posturing something that I don't find that sexy. Do you know what I mean?
So you're reflecting a male idea of what's sexy rather than your own one.
It's like pornified. It's totally pornified.
If you're looking for sexual words that are yet to be pornified, take a browse through some older English. Quaint, the medieval equivalent of the ever-controversial star of episode 4 of this show, cunt. Or how about cods? Fountains? Hinges? Secrets? Uncomely parts? Yard? Yeah, sure it is, chaps. And as for the act of sex itself, sport, jig, rantipole, play at all fours, play itch buttocks. The archaic term joining giblets has to be more prophylactically effective than any True Love Waits campaign.
I personally, I like calling it my V.
V works because it's not only an abbreviation, it's sort of descriptive.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly, because it is kind of a V. I call it my V. I love calling it my V. I don't know why. Sometimes I worry that I'm saying V also because I'm secretly still scared to name that part. You know what I mean? Like, is it out of shame that I'm calling it my V? But it's become sexy to me. I like V.
And do you have a phallic equivalent?
D.
D.
Yeah. I call sex P to V. That's like my term. P to V. Yeah. I do call it P to V. Another former girlfriend of mine sort of chastised me for using it that way. She was like, that is not sexy at all. Like, there's nothing remotely sexy about calling it P to V.
It's very heteronormative as well.
That's the reason why I called it P to V was because I was like, we need to get more specific. So I sometimes call it P to V. We can call it M to V. We can call it H to V. We can call it V to V. Or H to P, M to P, P to B. This system works for me.
It requires quite a lot of concentration.
It does. It does.
You might not be feeling that verbal at the critical time.
It only works. You know, it doesn't work when you have to say them all in a row, but it does work when you. anyways, it's more of a technical term. I use this whenever I'm describing what happened to friends of mine. I never use it while the things are happening. I'm never like, hey, do you want to give me some M to V?
Good to know. Nothing kills the moment quite like having to check the spreadsheet to decode what you're supposed to be putting where.
I would really love to see some more options.
We're going
to
get them for you, Caitlin.
I would really appreciate that. I need help.
Between Urban Dictionary and Rogers Profanosaurus, there must be thousands and thousands of synonyms for every sexual act and the associated body parts. We couldn't cover nearly all of them in this episode. It was just the tip of the iceberg. So I want to know, which words work for you? I'm particularly interested to hear from you if you're a sex educator of some kind, or a parent who's been having the talk with your offspring, or if you yourself would talk particularly well. What are the words that don't make you cringe or blush or laugh?
Like, as a test, that's a really good one. Like, can you say this without laughing? Or feeling the weird, like, butterfly embarrassment feelings. Well, is it sexy? Like, does it feel sexy to you? I guess that's the question.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is debridement. Noun. Medicine. the removal of damaged tissue or foreign objects from a wound. Try using it in an email today. The Allusionist was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with thanks to Caitlin Prest, Vari McFarlane, and Dawn Foster. The music is by Martin Austwick. Seek out Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter. I'll link to Vari's novels and to lots of other material related to this episode at theallusionist.org.